All right. Hey, everybody. This is Macy.
And Courtney.
And you're listening to The Rest is Confetti, a podcast where two Midwestern white women watch and review mostly obscure horror and indie films. Today, we are discussing the Netflix original film, Apostle. Courtney, you take it with a synopsis.
All right, so we've got, in 1905, Thomas Richardson travels to a remote Welsh island to rescue his sister Jennifer, who has been kidnapped and held for ransom by a sinister religious cult. And the tagline for this movie is, "Your God can't help you."
Which is amazing, we've agreed. Also,
oh yeah.
Full disclosure, we had some technical difficulties, and we are recording this for the second time, so we're going to do our best to act really shocked at all the comments, and but we're a little more organized, which
it's
is
true.
Good, because this is a heavy film.
Oh, yeah, it is.
So, Courtney, would you recommend this film to people?
Absolutely. I think it's got a little bit of everything, like Netflix is known to do. It's got awesome, awesome cinematography. The acting is really phenomenal, I think, especially from Dan Stevens and Michael Sheen. And yeah, I think it's great. I love it.
Yeah, I would also recommend it. It's fantastic. As I said, the first one or maybe even two times we've recorded now, I am so mad at myself that I didn't watch this. It was on my radar. It's been on my watch list since it came out. I remember seeing the previews for it. And like so many things, I added it to my watch list. And then it sat there while I watched Parks and Rec and The Office over and over and over again. So
happens to the best of us.
Yeah, and nobody was talking about this. Like I said, I saw it on Netflix. I never heard anyone talk about, oh my gosh, Apostle, you have to see Apostle. And I watch it, and I'm just like, why did no one talk about this? This movie is amazing.
Yeah, this one flew right under the radar, and it's so underrated. I want everyone to watch it. It's so good, guys. It's got everything.
It is so good. So go out and watch it. It's on Netflix. Everyone has Netflix, so go watch Apostle.
No excuses.
Yes. So a few facts about this movie before we get into our spoiler full discussion. It first premiered at the Fantastic Fest in September of 2018. It was released on Netflix on October 12th of 2018. As Courtney said, it stars Dan Stevens and Michael Sheen, directed by Gareth Evans, whose most notable filmography pieces, I guess you could say, are The Raid and The Raid 2. I did not realize that he did those, but that makes a lot of sense now.
I need to watch those now.
Yeah. And it was filmed in South Wales, and it is a beautiful film. It is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. That scenery. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. All right, we're going into spoilers, guys. So if you haven't watched this movie, first of all, what's wrong with you? And second of all, please stop, because this movie is very shocking. Spoilers matter in this movie. I'm not a spoiler person. I don't care. I care about where we end up. I don't care if I know how people get there. It's fine. But this is a movie I'm really glad I didn't know anything going in, except that it had Dan Stevens and was gruesome as. So please go watch it before coming back to listening to our spoiler full review. So as we said, Courtney, this film is beautiful.
Oh,
gorgeous, stunning scenery. It's so atmospheric. We talked a little bit about Midsommar because there's a couple things in here that remind us of Midsommar. But Midsommar, and this is not a criticism, it was supposed to be like this, is so bright to the point it's almost washed out. And I that's not a criticism. I personally prefer the darker feel to this movie because Midsommar kind of hurt my eyes a little bit.
Oh, yeah, there were some scenes when it was almost, like, too angelic, but like we said, not that's what the movie was supposed to be, so not a criticism, just a fact.
Right, that was purposeful, so it's fine. this was filmed in the middle of Dan Stevens filming Legion. I don't know if any of you have seen Legion, but like this film, go out and watch it. It's amazing. We're huge Legion fans.
Huge.
We've watched the series several times.
Oh,
well,
my
not
gosh.
Season 3, because we don't want it to end, but we're just watching seasons 1 and 2. And you can tell I wanted to call him David this whole time because he is full on David, crazy eyes, face, hair,
everything. Seriously, he looked like a feral creature. Like in the opening scene, his eyes are darting around and it's just, it is. It's that look that David has a lot where it's like kind of crackhead, but you know he can handle himself too.
Absolutely. And he is taking some sort of drug through this. They never really explain it, which is fine. Not everything has to be explained. It's pretty clear that he has withdrawals when he goes too long without it.
So maybe like laudanum or something. I feel like that was probably a popular one back then or something like that.
That's the word I was looking for. I wanted to call it, like, is there something called Ipecac? Or, like, it sounds like Ichabod, but it's something else, and it's something like that. I think
that's the one that makes you vomit uncontrollably, though.
Yes, yeah. And I was like, I know it's not that, because he's enjoying it too much. Yeah. So, yeah, it was probably laudanum, which is essentially just poppy opium.
Right. I was going to say, yeah, that's opium, so that makes sense why he's all, like, he looks really anemic the whole film and is just filthy from head to toe.
Yes, red-rimmed eyes. They just pulled him off the set of Legion. I think he left the set of Legion to go film this, and then he'd go back to the set of Legion. And, it was probably real laudanum, too, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so the film opens with Thomas, who is Dan Stevens' character. He's back from, I don't know that it was the Crusades. I think he's actually a missionary, not like a knight or anything.
I would agree.
Also wrong time period for the Crusades, but that kind of stuff goes on through all time periods, so.
Very true.
But I think he was more of like a peaceful missionary. And he's made it back home. He finds out his sister has been kidnapped by this cult and taken to an island. Did they ever say how long she'd been there?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. This is Courtney's third watch of this film. It was my first watch, so she's a little more knowledgeable than me. So, Courtney, feel free to correct me on anything.
Of course, of course.
And so, yeah, they're, his sister's being held for ransom. This family friend asks him to go get her back. Don't pay the ransom until you see that she's alive, because it's been long enough that they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he pretends that he wants to join this cult. He's in line to get on this boat, and his ticket has a red spot on it.
The red spot.
And he switches with another guy whose suitcase gets marked, and we find out that somehow someone on the island must have known that he was the brother. But because he switched, the other guy got the brunt of the cult's anger.
Yes, he did.
He got the shiz beat out of him, and then he got his throat slit, and which establishes very quickly that these are bad people.
Yes, this is not an actual peaceful cult, despite the fact that that's what they're trying to preach to people.
Right, because this was not self-defense. We see a brutal murder by the cult later on, but it's in self-defense. Mm-hmm. This is, they've kidnapped a woman for money, and they think that this is the guy coming to pay a ransom, and they kill him brutally when they can't find the money. So, not good guys.
Yeah, not at all.
So, we talked about previously, when Michael Sheen came on, I didn't know what to think, because Michael Sheen is always, like, the best worst guy and the worst best guy, and you never know who he's gonna be.
I can't trust his face at all. It's just, he's that good, too. Like, he's definitely up there on list of actors that I enjoy him in every single thing that he's in.
He's so good, and when he plays good guys, I always wait for him to be evil, but not because, he's always an evil guy. He just kind of looks, like we talked about in Passengers, I kept waiting, he blew up the ship, or he malfunctioned something, or he's going to kill him. No, he literally just gave them booze. Like, that's all he did, but he looked maniacal or something. I don't know.
He's got them shifty eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he shows up. And he's the leader of this cult. He is the Prophet Malcolm. Sometimes they call him the Apostle, don't they?
I think so. And Brother Malcolm, all that Brother fun Malcolm, culty stuff.
Yes, all the fun culty stuff. We will just call him Malcolm.
Yes.
And, yeah, so we're introduced to him, all the people. They do church, all that stuff. Thomas sees a woman floating outside the window. And Malcolm is pissed because apparently nobody but Malcolm and Thomas can see this woman outside the window.
Yep, and she's quite even though it's a quick shot, that is quite a woman to behold. She's got, like, white, wispy hair. You can tell that there is something immediately, like, kind of ethereal about her.
Right, and then Thomas goes out of the church around the corner, and the windows are way too tall for anyone to have just walked by them like that. Mm-hmm. So, immediately we see, and some, like, moss grows and withers and does some really weird supernatural stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we're immediately led on to the fact that this is real. Like, it's a cult, and cults aren't good, but they're not a made-up cult. They are based on a real spiritual happening on this island.
Right, there is supernatural shit just abounding.
Right. Then we are introduced to the doomed young love of the two teenagers in the boat. We Jeremy. Were talking about how much easier dresses make sex. So convenient.
Oh, so, yeah, for
good
sure.
Good for them. Then the boy, Jeremy, runs into Thomas in the woods. He's been sneaking about with his girl. Thomas is sneaking about looking for his sister. And Thomas then gets into a house. Sorry, I'm getting really confused. So he runs into Jeremy. This is so hard doing this after we've already talked about it. I'm like, wait, what? What are we talking about? Luckily, we can edit and I can cut all that out, but...
Excellent.
Yes. So yeah, he runs into Jeremy. They kind of have a look of like, I won't tell if you won't, and then they run off in their opposite directions.
Yep. That's their bond.
That's their bond. Thomas gets in the house. There's weird moving blood and this lady under the floor slurping up his blood. It's weird.
Right.
I don't know that we saw much in the house. I had a toddler in and out of the room. I was interrupted a couple times.
Yeah,
did anything
that was just
more
like
happen?
The bloodletting scene where it's like every single villager has this cute little jar and they just have to fill it with a little bit of blood every night to appease the goddess of the island. And, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, like you do in a cult like that.
Right. That was a lot of blood, though.
That was a lot. I was thinking that. I was like, and how, I mean, this is still, I mean, it's a long time ago. I don't know how they would have known, like, what's safe, where to cut, like,
mm-hmm.
a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah, because medicine back in this day was like, here, have some cocaine, and I'm gonna, like, put weed in your shoes.
Right.
All right, go home. Like,
all right, you're good.
Yeah, I'm gonna wear this bird mask. Someone told me they put weed in the beak of those bird masks. I always thought it was herbs, so it wouldn't stink, but I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's what I thought. I mean, works, I guess.
Yeah, weed wouldn't smell very good, but it'd smell better than death, so...
Oh, yeah. I've smelled some weed that would smell pretty good.
That is true. Some of it smells okay. It's like the really good weed or the really bad weed smells bad.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, moving on.
Moving on.
Has nothing to do with this film. We'll get to some of those films. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah. We're Moonwalkers? We're getting to Moonwalkers, man. That's going to be fun.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we talked a lot about the lingering shots in this movie, and like we said, it's filmed beautiful, the scenery is awesome, but apart from the scenery, just the imagery and the way the shots are framed and the lingering stuff that, Courtney, you said The Witch is a lot like that, where it'll just focus on something, but nothing's there.
Yeah, and nothing actually happens. Like, it's that buildup of, like, you think, like, okay, so we have this shot going into the woods, and there's nothing there, but your brain just starts making up, like, there's got to be something there, because the music is building as intensely as it is, and then, nope, just next shot. Just hard cut to
right.
a next shot, and you're like, it almost makes you jump, and I do. I like the directors who are doing that. I think it's fun.
Oh, yeah, and it adds to the tension so much. And like you said, so the sound. Much. The sound design on this movie is so great. It's intense. It makes you anxious and gives you goosebumps just from the sound. Like, not much can be happening, but the sound is so unsettling.
Oh, yeah. Definitely deserved an Oscar for sure, the sound editing team. You guys, you're the unsung heroes for sure.
No, yes, absolutely. So everybody has to work on this island, and Thomas is working, and Jeremy comes up, and he's like, what were you doing in the woods? And this was great gaslighting on Thomas's part. He's like, I was having a cigarette. What were you doing? I thought I could trust you. I guess not. And then Jeremy ends up apologizing to him.
Total deflection.
Yeah. So great gaslighting, great manipulation there. I'll give you a pass because you're trying to save your sister's life, and these are bad people. And he wasn't trying to be a jerk to Jeremy. He just didn't want to get turned in.
Right. He's just like, I'm sorry for my lack of grace. I'm like, yeah, I mean, but when you find out later what happened to him, you really start to understand, like, oof, yeah, you kind of got a good reason for being that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then we find out that pretty much everything as far as food sources on this island is screwed. The crops are dying. Trigger warning for animal cruelty in this movie. There's
Absolutely.
A lot of... murder, also abuse, like domestic violence and molestation and things like that. The animal violence is more on the forefront of that, though.
Yeah, so we see the blood sacrifice.
Yeah, lots of throat slitting and stuff, and it's kind of sad because you don't die right away when your throat gets slit. So, yeah. But yeah, the sheep is giving birth, and they pull the lamb out. This guy is not one elbow, but two elbows deep in this sheep. Which I'm like, she's not coming back from that. You guys want more lambs, right?
Right. So,
no thank you. Mm-mm. And he pulls the lamb out, and it looks like it's missing skin and stuff. We couldn't quite figure it out.
Right, like it looks like it was like underdeveloped, like the skin didn't develop around the throat, and I did just to see a little lamb get like thrown in a bucket as it's like dying. That was pretty haunting.
Yeah, that was really sad. It was rough to watch. So they figure out that they don't have the right guy. That's there for the sister. So they decide to take all the new people and line them up in the church, and they're going to have them recite the Bible, and you can just see Thomas's face be like, oh, fuck.
Thomas didn't study for this one.
No, he did not study at all. Although, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I was always really bad with Bible verses. I grew up in church, and I could never remember any Bible verses. So I'm like, even if I was part of the cult, I'd be screwed.
Oh, yeah. Totally agree.
But he gets lucky, though, because the way they lined him up, this other dude's in front of him who ends up being a spy from the king. This was one of the things that I have a couple, I don't even want to call them complaints, but just moments of, oh, wait, what's going on here that I feel like came a little out of the blue?
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is why the king wants Malcolm dead,
mm-hmm.
because they're just on an island, like, alone, and they're not, as far as we know, doing anything.
Right, like, besides Jennifer, like, before that, mm-hmm. they hadn't done anything. Like, they really were just trying to exist and kind of, I think they wanted people to forget about them, honestly.
Right, so this spy from the king, he's like, for king and country, and then goes to stab Malcolm. Thomas stops him, gets his chest sliced, and saves Malcolm's life, and then the spy dude gets speared several times.
Yeah, it was pretty dope.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Pretty good. And he didn't die right away, which was way more realistic. Because sometimes people will get, like, stabbed in the shoulder and be dead. I'm like, that would have taken a really long time.
Right.
So
a little longer than that.
Yeah, so that was good. And then they patch Thomas up, and Malcolm's like, when one of us bleeds, we both bleed. Slices his hand open. So he's not using that hand for a while.
Oh my gosh.
You have muscles in your hand. Why is everyone slicing their hand? Pretend you got the diabetes. Poke your finger. It's fine.
Right. We get the significance. It's fine.
Yes. So we find out that the redhead that has been there is Malcolm's daughter, and she is beautiful and lit so differently, and she's got this porcelain skin and red hair, and she is just, like, glowing. Courtney, you said she was... You felt like she was kind of the angel, the angelic presence on this island.
Yes, Andrea the angel. Yeah, she is. I agree with you. Like, yeah, I mean, she's pale, naturally. But, yeah, she's definitely lit differently. And it is. It's like, oh, yeah, because you're, like, the nice, compassionate, reasonable one who's actually a good Christian. Like,
right. Who cares about people and is kind and doesn't care only about power or money. I mean, money doesn't really come up in... Well, I guess it does because the sister's been ransomed, but because they don't have to.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, that's true.
All those intertwining things, all that stuff. I am trying not to rant too much when I'm on a podcast.
Yes.
Because I have a lot of personal vendettas that I can get on.
We'll do side podcasts for that. That'll be a good one. When we watch Pure, that'll be a good one to do it for.
Oh, yeah. I have a lot of religious rants to go on, guys. So, just warning you.
Heads up.
Yeah. So, Jeremy's girl, her name is Fionn, which I think is such a beautiful name. I love that.
I do, too. That was beautiful.
Yeah. It's spelled with two Fs, though, and I've never really understood that, but it's not my language, so don't be an ignorant white lady, Macy.
Don't be a Karen.
Don't be a Karen. I would like to speak to the manager of this language, please.
Yes, please.
Please. So Fionn finds out that she's pregnant, which they also don't really go into how she figured that out. That's fine, but I am a little curious. She was just in the bathroom with a mirror, and I mean, I've been pregnant, and I don't think I would have been able to tell that I was pregnant from looking at my crotch.
Right, like, I'm like, how, like, was she, like, up in there? Was it, like, that was kind of a vague one, I would agree. But like she said, the period was probably, like, if you haven't had your period in, like, 5 to 6 months, yeah, you're probably pregnant, but yeah.
You're very pregnant.
I don't know what she was looking at, but whatever it was, it confirmed that she is, in fact, pregnant with Jeremy's child.
Mm-hmm. Because she's talking to Andrea, and she says, you're knowledgeable, which at first I thought meant maybe Andrea was, like, a prostitute, or, like, I don't know if she's, like, this town sleeps around. Just had any sexual
experience at all.
Yeah, but then we do find out later on that she's kind of a doctor. She's not really trained, that we have any impression of, anyway, but she's got lots of herbs and tinctures and all that stuff, and she's kind of the doctor of the island. So that's what was meant by that, but that was not made clear for a while after the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But she talks to her, and Andrea's like, well, if you were going to be pregnant, you'd have to. And Fionn's like, many times over many months. What is it with religious people and sex education? If you have a bunch of sex for months and you're 14, you're going to get pregnant.
Yep. You are fertile.
oh my gosh, you're going to get pregnant. Why don't people know this? Oh, okay. I'm going to need my rant. And we're moving on. So, yeah, she's pregnant. Her dad's peeping on her in the outhouse.
Which is that's so creepy. So gross.
Oh, and I actually did not know that that was her dad until, like, the end of the movie.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, Quinn the fuckboy, who you know immediately is going to be the fuckboy of the movie. Yeah, that's his daughter. Oh, and, oh, God, I hate him so much.
Yeah, he's disgusting. So with him is where some of that trigger warning comes in. A lot of the trigger warning is with Quinn, actually. He's just
seriously.
He's gross. He's abusive. I was telling Courtney, yeah, I knew a lot of guys in youth group that were a lot like him with the, I'm going to pretend to throw a ball at your head and not, just to scare you, because I enjoy it. So, oh my God. Yeah.
The theme endures.
Yes, it absolutely does. So, yeah, he's peeping on his daughter. You get the feeling that this is not good. He's messed up. Then Thomas is going to break back into that house that he had been in the beginning. And he's, like, in an underground tunnel.
Ooh, and yeah, when we finally get a good view of the goddess down there in the gross descent cave.
The descent slash Shawshank scene.
Yeah. Oh, that was disgusting. That, like, made my skin crawl, but that means it was done very well. I felt so filthy when he's down there with, like, all the dead bodies. It's almost like sewage, but not.
Yeah, it's sewage, but entrails and blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's down there in this tunnel, and they've got him cornered. Malcolm's at the one end of the tunnel, and I think his name was Frank, was at the other end of the tunnel. Frank is Jeremy's dad.
And he's just a beta trying to do his best. He's probably, like, the least bad guy on the whole island.
Yeah, he honestly kind of seemed... So what happened, we learn in a flashback quite a bit later on, is that Quinn, Frank, and Malcolm all washed up on this shore after, I don't know if it was a battle or a shipwreck, and they decided to settle on this island. And so I think Frank really just was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and these were his people, so he stuck with them.
Right. They were, I know they were escaped convicts, so they were fleeing for freedom. But yeah, like, I feel like he was probably, like, he stole some bread or something. Like, I don't think he did a violent crime, but I bet Quinn did a very violent crime.
Yeah, Quinn probably did. Quinn did some bad things. So, okay, I missed that they were escaped convicts, so thank you for that, because that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, no worries. No, because they don't go into it a lot, but yeah, they were basically just escape convicts, which I guess explains why the king might have sent people, but, like, you think they would just assume they were dead, probably. Like, they should have been dead, really. They just washed up on the island by luck.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the crimes they did, you would think would have been horrible if the king was sending assassins, but the only person I see out of that group really doing anything horrible is Quinn.
Right.
So anyway, who knows? We will never know. So we'll just make it up in our heads. So yeah, Thomas is in this tunnel. He's getting cornered in. He finds, he sees that there's like this river underneath of him and there's space for him to breathe. So he jumps down in there so that he can get away. And then you see the, from the back, this head rise out of the water. And oh my gosh, it is terrifying. I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it.
Oh my gosh, yeah, she is, the makeup with her was amazing, I will say. Like, mad props so for good. That.
Which, this movie is almost all practical effects. I mean, there's some CGI with the plants growing, but honestly, I think 99% of this movie were practical effects, which, yeah, I'm here for the practical effects. I would much rather watch a shitty puppet on the screen than shitty CGI.
You mean like Velocipaster?
Yes, like Velocipaster. That puppet is better than the CGI in Zombies. And yes, I've watched Zombies.
I have not yet. That might have to go on the list.
It might go on the list. It's so bad, though. I don't know. Maybe we'll do it. Who knows? Anyway, back to that.
Yeah.
So she rises out of this water. She gives this shriek, this chilling shriek, and just looks really excited to see him and just starts going for him. And so Dan Stevens, if you're unfamiliar with him, has the most piercing, like, sea blue eyes. Stunning. And he's covered in blood at this moment, and his eyes are really wide. And just that shot of him completely, like, almost, like, blacked out because it's dark and he's covered in blood. And then you see his eyes so big and bright. Mm-hmm. So good. He turns around and hauls out of there.
Oh, yeah. Barely gets away, but he does.
Barely gets away, and she's chasing him, which we find out later. She wanted him to take over, essentially, like, to kill her or take over her mantle as the goddess of the island. But at this moment in time, we don't know that, and we're just like, get out of there, please. Don't die.
Please don't die.
Please don't die. You're beautiful. Don't die.
So,
Andrea finds him after all of this happens the next morning, and she brings him a change of clothes. He takes off his shirt, and she's like, what the heck happened to you? Because he is all scarred up.
Huge cross scar across the back. What could that be from?
So we get a flashback, a little history here, and that's where we learn that he's wearing robes, so he's a monk or missionary of some sort. Mm-hmm. And he goes to Peking and tries to convert people against their will, because that always works out great.
Super
great. And I did love when they, like, I had a love-hate when they have the ropes around his arms, and he's trying to pray, and he's bringing his hands together. It was, like, beautiful at the same time. It's like, you can pray without, like, you know, putting your hands together, dude. That looks really painful.
That struggle was, that shot was just so beautiful.
Right, and it was about the symbolism, which I greatly appreciate and loved, but I couldn't help but think, like, I probably would have just been like, I'm going to pray without bringing my arms together.
Right?
But I'm lazy, and he's not. So
that's true.
That's why he is where he is. And then they have this giant burning cross, and you see it in the reflection of his eye at first, and it's just, the imagery is incredible.
Oh, yeah, and that we find shot. Out. Oh my gosh, just it's like it is burned into my consciousness.
pun intended. So we find out that they have this metal cross that they've heated up, and they are branding the missionaries on the back with it, and as they are branding him, the burning cross falls over, and that is when he lost his faith.
Mhm. And you sympathize with him and his kind of negative view of all of it, cuz also I love, like, after he tells that, and then he says the beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. And I would just, his delivery of that, I loved it.
Oh, it's great. His cadence, his voice, the deep, growly Dan Stevens voice is my favorite. Because he has many a voice. Because he is possibly the greatest actor of our generation.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. The range, like you said, he has, like, so much range.
He does. He does everything. He's done comedies. He's done romantic movies. He has done horror films, thrillers, musicals. He's in a Disney film. He's in Night at the Museum. He's in Permission. He's in all sorts of things.
All of it. And Downton Abbey. And that's where he got his humble start.
Chubby little Danny in Downton Abbey.
Fresh. Fresh.
The Queen is coming.
Whatever shall we do?
Ooh, the curtains, the draperies.
For real, though, that's what it's like.
So, yeah. So, anyway.
Anyway.
He's amazing. And they're hanging out. What's next? Oh, we get to... Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, this is the rough one. This is, we're getting to, like, my least favorite part of the whole movie.
Oh, yeah. Hey, your video's back. Hi, Courtney.
Hi. I gotta check back on my notes, but yeah, I was like, I just wanna check. I can't wait till we can be back together in the same room, breathing the same air, and not being terrified of killing one another.
Oh, I know. And part of me is like, well, we're both completely quarantined, so we could be together, right? I'm like, no, that's the thinking that kills people.
Right. No, but literally, like, as soon as the weather is good, yeah, let's do our plan. But anyways.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, back to podcasting.
Yes.
Yeah, then I think the next part that we get to is where we actually see the witch and how they've kind of enslaved her to do their bidding, which she's not doing. And they're, like, force-feeding her their blood, and it makes things grow, but then it withers because she doesn't want to drink their blood.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, oh my goodness, she is. It reminded me a little bit of Game of Thrones, the one-eyed or three-eyed raven.
Ooh, yeah.
In the trees and things like that, especially absolutely. As he's described in the book. Because he's a lot more in the book, a lot more a part of the roots and the vines. Whereas I think in the show, he was more like, it was just stuck through him or something.
Yeah.
He was the fertilizer in the show. But yeah, they have trapped her here somehow, which they kind of show in a flashback, holding her down. But they don't really, although she's also not trapped. It's a little bit ambiguous as to what power they have over her, because she was in that tunnel with Thomas, although we don't know that she was actually physically there, because she can obviously project herself. So she may have just been projecting, because she never touches him.
Yeah, that was my initial thought, was like, that is like, that's her just projecting her image around the island. But like we said, like, I wish they would have spent just like 10 more minutes going into like the lore behind her, because whatever's going on, it's very fascinating. As someone who grew up loving, like, Greek mythology and all the fun wood nymphs and all that stuff, I was like, seriously, if there was a book on this movie, I would absolutely buy it and read it, because it just seems really fascinating to me.
Oh, absolutely. And that was one thing we talked about. A movie, it doesn't seem based on any legend. Mm-mm. It's very original. It is a completely original film, which we love.
Yes.
But I really want to know more about the lore. And if it meant that it was going to be 20 minutes longer, I would have been cool with that, because there are a few things that I just wish I knew more of because I love it so much.
Exactly.
So yeah, they've enslaved her here somehow, all that stuff. Then we go back to town, and Jeremy tells Fionn that his dad is, he's getting off the island. He's not doing this anymore. Any of that stuff. So, Fionn decides she's going to go with him because she's pregnant with the baby, which she also just told him she was pregnant, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And she's packing. Jeremy goes down to get her this cute gift he made.
Oh, and then it's so sweet.
It happens. This is the scene. Honestly, the next isn't maybe even 10 minutes. I might fast forward it next time I watch.
Like I said, I did this time. I watched it the first two times, but I was like, honestly, it's so just tragic and just painful.
Right. It went a completely opposite direction that I thought it was going to go in, and that direction was not better. I don't know that it was worse, because I thought when Quinn comes in and sees her packing, Quinn, again, is her father, and he gets so angry, I thought he was going to rape her.
Oh, shit, yeah. I mean, he's a terrible guy, so you wouldn't put it past him.
Right, he obviously wants control of her, doesn't like that she's got a crush on this boy, and he was peeping on her in the bathroom and had physical reactions to her looking at her crotch in the mirror.
A lot of weird vibes.
Yeah, I thought that when he closed the door, he was going to assault her. But no, he doesn't assault her. He takes a knife and cuts the baby out of her womb. And I think burned it, because he was sitting in front of the fire.
Yeah, it's a dark scene. Like, you don't even see it, but you don't need to, because all the evidence is there.
Which,
and it's not pretty.
Yeah. Thank you, Gareth Evans, for not showing that, because we didn't need to see it. That's gross.
Right.
I don't mind gore at all. I love gory movies. My favorite movie when I was in kindergarten was Aliens. Yes. Gore does not bother me. But there is a line that I personally draw where I really don't want to see things like 14-year-old girls having the babies cut out of their stomachs and burned right. by their abusive fathers. I don't need to see it. I know it happened. I don't need to watch it happen.
Definitely a less is more situation.
Yes. Excellent taste and restraint in that, Gareth Evans. Thank you, because we know you're listening to our podcast.
Yes. One day. Yeah. One day.
One day. So then Jeremy comes in and sees this, attacks Quinn, understandably, and then they tussle. He gets a couple good hits in on Quinn.
Yeah, and there is that one literal just like 1 second of hope where you're like, oh, is this going to actually play out like justice-wise? And the answer is no, it is not.
No, there's no happy endings really. Not really, because not Jennifer's really messed up. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so then Quinn stumbles out of the house and yells, Jeremy, he killed my girl. So Jeremy gets blamed. And Quinn calls for purification. And this is another scene that I'll probably fast forward. My stop
like you said,
is running,
though, I
so
do.
I'm gonna give it a sec.
Yeah, you're good.
Okay.
But oh my God. No, the shot, though, the shot that you were talking about. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I thought purification was going to be like burning alive or something like that because fire is used to purify stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But no, they hunt Jeremy down. He runs, obviously, because he knows what purification is.
Mm-hmm.
And they catch him. And then they put him on this table. Don't strap him down. They use clamps. Clamp his arms and legs. They clamp his head. And like we had talked about previously, what most directors, I think, would have done is shown his face as if we were looking at his face.
Mm-hmm.
And they tighten the clamp around his head, and you hear his skull crunch just a little bit.
Mm.
And then he gets blood, like, in his eyes. So most directors would have shown his eyes get bloodshot, but what it shows instead is you, as if you were Jeremy, looking out through his eyes, and his vision just, you just see blood spread across his vision. Not completely red, just streaks of blood.
Such a cool shot. Like, one of the coolest things I've seen.
As you hear the crunching bone, and it was so, oh my gosh, it just, it was so awful.
Very visceral. That is a very visceral, intense moment.
Yes, indeed. And then everyone has to wear these black robes for the ceremony. They've got two, like, KKK looking dudes, but they're in black, and it's, what a shot, what an image.
Oh, yeah.
So, at this point, I still don't know what purification means. I mean, he's clamped down. I thought maybe it's Braveheart, where they, like, gut him? I don't know. Well, then they shave the top of his head, and it changes angles, and you see that there's this giant, like, corkscrew and hole saw hand crank, and they're gonna drill into his skull, hollow out his head. And they start turning it, and again, they don't show it, like, going in or anything, which is nice, but you hear the crunching, and his sounds, and his body twitching, and it is just awful. I mean, visceral is the perfect word to describe it. It was horrific.
Mm-hmm. Like, you feel like you've gotten your head crushed, which is a pretty eerie feeling to have on just, like, a random Tuesday.
Yeah. And I was nauseated. It was really, brain stuff really bothers me. The scene in From Hell with Johnny Depp where they do the lobotomy, like, really messes me up. And that
Absolutely.
Wasn't even gruesome or anything.
No, that was like a quick little dink and it's done. And this one is not like that. But, oh, and then the shot where they pull it out and it's just like open head cavity, brains, blood everywhere. And then they just put a little like red petal from a flower in.
Yeah. And his foot's, like, twitching for a little bit afterwards, and it's just, ugh.
Oh, yeah. Everything in this is so realistic, too. Like, again, I feel it's one of those I couldn't even step out of if I want to. Like, everyone's acting is so good. Everything looks so real. That's an intense scene to get through. That was a hard one.
Yeah, it was really, really, really rough. Huge trigger warning for that. Because, I mean, Courtney and I are doing a horror podcast. We're cool with gore. I love watching surgeries. I mean,
but that felt this, new. That felt like
this
weird.
Was rough. It was weird. I hadn't seen anything like that before. Ugh. So, yeah, I literally wrote on my notes, takes up half a page, purification, oh my God.
Seriously, though. And then, so then, of course, we've got Dan Stevens again. And Andrea are back there, and Andrea's horrified. Like, she is losing her faith quickly, obviously.
Yeah, she is. And she actually goes to her room and prays to God instead of the goddess of the island for a little bit. So she's, I feel for her. Everything, her entire world is turning upside down.
Mm-hmm.
This is also where I noted, so Quinn is mad with power at this point, which we knew he was a creep and a bad dude. But this was one of the other things I felt came a little out of nowhere when he started going on and on about, they should be worshiping me, and Malcolm's nothing, and I should be in charge, and Malcolm's a false prophet. I was like, wait a minute, where'd that come from? I know you're a bad dude, but I didn't know you wanted to be in charge before this moment.
Yeah, he never vocalizes that, so I don't know. I guess we're just, yeah.
Yeah. This would have been another great, just like, 3 to 5 minutes of, you know, even just looks where Malcolm's getting praised for doing whatever and he just looks kind of bitter. Because the acting's fantastic. They definitely, he had the capacity to act like that with his face if he needed to. So they didn't do that, and that's fine. But I do wish I would have maybe seen it coming a little bit so it felt a little more cohesive.
Yeah.
But that's a very small criticism in an otherwise fantastic movie.
Yes.
So then Thomas is going to save Jen, and she's, like, in a sack and hung up and all that stuff, and he sneaks in there, and he's going to save her. And then they're just, like, talking about where he's been for a while and everything. And I'm like, shut up and talk about it on the boat. Just get out there.
Right. There, like, at that point, the island is literally starting to just be on fire for whatever reason, so...
Right, everything's on fire, people are dying, there's a monster man with a beehive on his head.
Oh, the Grinder, yeah, that's a great character.
Oh, so good, and so smart, because he's terrifying, but it's literally just an actor with, like, a weird hat on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but just covered in blood.
Mm-hmm, I believe him as a monster, so, you know, another great example of less can be more. You don't have to spend a ton of money to have a really creepy monster dude.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they catch Thomas and Jennifer because they're conversing and catching up on the life. They're having a little tea party back there in the corner. And Thomas wakes up with hooks, like these giant like fish hooks or meat hooks or something in his hands and his legs.
It's not good.
Oh, it's so bad. And then... another hand crank. Hand cranks in this movie are bad. Stay away from the hand cranks.
Seriously.
If you see a hand crank or hear a hand crank or know anything to do with a hand crank, run.
Flee. Flee the premises.
Flee, you fools. Abandon your posts. We're going to get Lord of the Rings into every podcast. You just wait and see.
So help me.
Yep. And so then the Grinder starts pulling this hand crank and there's these big, I mean, it's a Grinder, this is where he got his name, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. It can't be a coincidence.
He grinds people in a really uncomfortable looking way.
And I think normally he's grinding dead people because you do see half of Jeremy's body.
Yeah.
And he's feeding Jeremy to the witch against her will, like shoving a funnel down her throat and feeding her.
Right. Jeremy's. Visceral.
Yeah. So... anyway, but then Thomas is going to get ground up alive, and I knew he was going to get out of it. I didn't doubt that, but I was not expecting they do get his hand. He only has a thumb and an index finger left, and it grinds his other fingers off.
And another, that is probably one of my favorite, like, if we're talking about the best, like, acting scenes. Oh, my God. Like, I'm like, in my head, I know that that's just an actor who's being dragged safely by strings across a table. And they have just used enough special effects and practical effects that it looks like someone just got their hand cut off. But, like, I can't get over the feeling that he's in mortal danger. And I'm just like, oh, my God, no. They're going to kill Dan Stevens.
And they hit such a perfect, all my words are escaping me today, guys. Sorry for my lack of vocabulary today. I haven't even been drinking. I was drinking last night and I had so many words last night. So, but they hit a really great middle ground with, it's not too much and it's not too little, to where there is a tussle and they're fighting back and forth and it's intense, but it doesn't go on for too long. Because it would have been a little anticlimactic if he had just gotten away, killed the dude, and run off.
Right.
But it could have very easily gone too much where you're like, okay, can they just stop fighting now? I really want to, like, see the end of the movie.
Right. And they hit
perfect. I never felt either one of those things during the scene.
Mm-mm. No, and I mean, we did, like, the one of the cool moments earlier in it was when he, like, gets away from the guards and he just kind of, like, drops on his knees and uses, like, the bar that's holding him hostage to, like, stab someone. So he I don't know exactly why, because clearly he wasn't a good fighter when he was over in Peking, but it seems like he has learned how to fight since then, because he definitely doesn't know nothing. But the grinder is also a terrifying figure. So, yeah, that was a good fight scene.
Yeah, you know, I thought that same thing, too. It's another backstory that I wish we had, to where this could have been a very successful miniseries, I think.
Ooh, yeah.
Like, just a three-episode, like, 2 hours each or something, you know, kind of right. Like a Stand.
The limited series that Netflix likes to do.
Mm-hmm, yeah, it would have been fantastic for that, because you could have established the lore, because it is also implied later on that this goddess is probably not the original goddess. Mm-hmm. I feel like what happens to Dan Stevens' character happened to her thousands of years ago, you know?
Oh, yeah. I agree.
Yeah. So he gets away from the grinder. He grinds the grinder in the grinder. And
trust me, that five times fast.
Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about the dating app.
Mm-mm.
And no, that's another podcast. That's for Patreons only.
For another time.
Yes. So the witch tells him, I've been waiting for you or looking for you for years, my son. And he goes to her and he's not afraid and she's not afraid. And they have this exchange and she like her, I don't know if it's nails or vines come out of her fingers and she like pokes his head. So we assume imparting wisdom, knowledge, memories, and probably transferring some consciousness to him.
Yeah. Sort of like Spock would do to someone.
Exactly. And then she says, live long and prosper.
And that would have been amazing. Because also tone would have changed completely.
Could you imagine if she had said, live long and prosper, and then he just gets beamed up? Beam like, me up, wow. Scotty.
Wow, that was a William different Shatner. Ending for a
William Shatner shows up and saves the day.
That would have been way happier. Way
it would have been way happier. I need an alternative ending for the DVD.
Yes. Yes. I would like that as well.
Yes. Okay. So, anyway, back to our seriousness. Light side tangents, but you know what? That's what you're going to get with this podcast. So,
it's true.
He burns her, which she wants. She wants him to burn her. And she's very peaceful about it. She, like, accepts it. And she never, like, screams or anything. She's very cool. She's very chill with being burned.
He's, like, he's freeing her, basically, at this point. Like, she's become a slave to poor, you know, Malcolm and everyone. And she just wants to go. She just wants to get the fuck out, guys.
Yep, she is done. So then he goes and he goes to save Andrea and Jen, who have been taken by Quinn and chained up. And he is telling them, I'm going to rape you until you're pregnant, and then I'm going to feed your babies to the witch, because I've got bigger balls than Malcolm, and that's what needed to be done. And you're like,
because he's the patriarchy incarnate.
Exactly. Wrong. we don't have any sort of political stance here. So anyway, Thomas comes in as Quinn is leaving this little prison area and just stabs him, which I loved, because too many times people jump and, ha ha, I have a knife, I'm going to kill you now. And then they like get hurt because they waited and didn't take them by surprise, but not Thomas. He's done fucking around.
You're wasting energy if you're narrating your murder. Just do the murder and then say something badass after to the corpse of the enemy that you just murdered.
Right. Exactly. So he stabs him in the, like, chest, and you think he's got the best of him. And I actually found myself thinking, this is too easy of a death for Quinn. I'm glad he's dying, but I wanted more to happen to him.
Absolutely. But
then he gets a knife. They tussle a little bit. They fight. He gets a knife, and he prison shanks the hell out of Thomas.
It's effective. Like, as much as I hate Quinn, like, that is a quick, like, I mean, what would you wager? Like, almost probably 10 times. It's just like, da-da-da-da-da, right in the side. And he's just bleeding out. Like, that's what you want to do if you want to defeat your enemy. I mean, it's real.
Right. So the girls then get, they get loose, get some length on that chain, and they hit him in the head with a rock, wrap the chain around his neck, and start to pull. And then Thomas holds the knife in place, and they just gut him from throat to crotch.
Oh, it's so gratifying. It's just one of those deaths where you're just like, oh, I need a cigarette after this. Like, I've been waiting for, like, 2 hours for that, man.
Oh, it was so good. I would have loved for him to go through the purification, but there's no time. So we're just going to gut him.
There's no time. We got to get off the island.
Right. So then they are running away, which I also love that in the scene where they killed Quinn, they both helped each other. It was not these women who are supposed to be survivors and strong need a man to come save them. Mm-hmm. But it's also not this man who's obviously competent and can take care of himself suddenly for no reason can't take care of himself and needs these women to come in and save him. Because neither of those would make any sense. But this was perfect where Thomas started to lose. So the girl stepped in and helped. And then Thomas was like, I'll help you finish the job, and helps them finish the job, and it's teamwork, and it's great, and it's like friends kill bad guys together.
Right, that's exactly what you want to do. You just want to rip them from, like, sternum to navel, and it's a good time when you bring down the patriarchy.
Exactly, so gratifying. So they're running off the island now. There's one boat left with a, which a, ugh, the, they get away, they're running, there's one boat left, with this really nice old couple who I hadn't seen before, but they were very pleasant. I'd live with them.
Right? Nicest cultist ever.
We'll get them a pin that they can wear with honor. The nicest cultist's award. Yeah, so Thomas does not make it off of this island. He succumbs to his wounds. Another amazing shot. He's on this hill, there's this big scraggly tree next to him, and then there's these mountains, and he's like in between the mountains, and it's just fantastic. I loved that part.
Oh, and the way he like falls, like, because also at this point it should be noted too, somehow Michael Sheen has made it.
Right, I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, no, but it is, it's like literally the last minute. I mean, he comes out of nowhere, and you're like, okay, and it looks like he's not actually dying. I think he's going to be like, okay, he just got wounded. And he lays down by Dan Stevens, and then the scene where, like, he, like, Dan falls to the earth, and it, like, flips with him. Oh, my, like, again, some of the shots in here were just so cool. It was so awesome.
And the transitions to those shots, because like you said, it like flipped around with him. And that's how it was when Jeremy was doing the purification thing. It like kind of flips around to show different angles. They weren't hard cuts I think I wouldn't have even noticed. But I noticed just how amazing the camera work was with these like fluid shots. And I just really appreciated that.
Oh, yeah.
So then he is laying there. His blood is running into the ground and the grass starts growing, and then the vines and roots start growing into him, just like the witch, and then the grass starts to breathe in unison with his breath.
Oh, and just visually so cool.
Oh, it was amazing. And yeah, there's that implication that Malcolm's going to hang out there and they'll kind of be a team, I guess.
Right. I also, in my own universe, like to think that Jennifer and Andrea actually started a beautiful lesbian relationship after this, too. Because, like, mm-hmm. they're definitely going to be at least best friends. Because, like, you don't escape a cult and not become best friends. But also, I mean, like, she did look enough like Dan Stevens. Like, it's probably not an awful trade-off, all things considered.
She's beautiful. I told you, she looks better after however many weeks or months in this prison cult living in a box and a sack than I do after a week in quarantine because of the coronavirus.
Seriously, guys, I'm so lazy.
It's bad. It's bad. There's a reason this is not a visual medium. It is audio. So I have a face for radio.
Me too.
We did talk a little bit about how, like we said, the acting in this is amazing. Dan Stevens, you're incredible because we know you listen to this podcast too. So we Absolutely. Love you. You're perfect. Your dying face was a little much though.
the cross-eyed thing. Yeah. I was like, yeah,
it was a little forced. It was a lot of, it was just a lot and there was a lot of cross-eyed stuff and it was a little much, but that's okay. I respect the creative decision and yes. I can go with it, but I did find myself starting to giggle a little.
Right. Well, and like you said, I think it would make sense more from an actual medical standpoint, which, I mean, I know we're on a supernatural island, so like we've abandoned all that stuff, mm-hmm. but like you said, he didn't get a head wound at all. Like that would make more sense if you'd have gotten a head wound, but
right.
But he just got hella shanked.
Like in Christmas Vacation, she falls down a well, her eyes go cross, she gets kicked by a mule, they go back to normal.
Exactly. That's real physics, folks.
That's how it works.
Oh my gosh.
Hashtag health.
Yes.
So, yeah, then we end, and it's a fantastic movie. I loved it. Like I said, minor criticisms that honestly stem more from me just wanting to know more about the world than anything else.
Right. I need like a prequel movie.
Yeah, they do. A prequel and then a sequel because, yeah, I also like to believe that Andrea and Jennifer became beautiful lesbians and started a like divine feminine cult because right. You know what? Obviously, not to get political, you don't just choose, like, you know, you feel how you feel, but there is no quicker way to let a woman know right. where she is on the spectrum than to put her in a patriarchal cult, and she will swear off men very quickly.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, anyway, slight rant. I won't go on any more rants, I promise. That's my tangent for the night.
That's my tangent for the day.
That tangent. And I think that about wraps it up.
Yeah.
So, would you fix anything in this movie if you could?
I think, like you said, I think I might take away maybe just, like, one or two little scenes, like, with Quinn or something, I don't know, and just get more lore. But like you said, like, it's not even a criticism of the movie. I want more information. Like, what a cool thing to set up, like, a whole island. She's a goddess. She doesn't seem to want blood, but if she gets it, the island flourishes. Like, I don't know, like, was she cursed, kind of, maybe? Like, that would just, it would be so cool if we got, like, a prequel or something, but, and like you said, like, I mean, it was already a 2-hour-long movie. 20 minutes wouldn't have, like, you know, been a make-or-break deal for me, but, mm-hmm. yeah, I'd say that's about it. I just want more information on, like, the goddess and stuff.
Yeah, same. I think I would just fix it by, making it a mini series, I think, because I also wanted more information and
HBO miniseries, that would have been dope.
Oh yeah, that would have been amazing. Yeah, I think that's the only thing that I would fix in it. I can't think of anything. You know, if there's anything else, it's obviously not a big enough deal for me to remember 20 minutes later, so
exactly.
Alrighty, so what are you reading, watching? And what are you excited to read and watch?
Right now, I'm watching Hunters on Amazon Prime. It is an insanely good show. It's directed by Jordan Peele, so I'd expect nothing less. It has just such a good cast, and it's kind of like if Inglourious Basterds happened in the 70s. So It's so good. And like I told you yesterday, there's a scene that I don't know why, I just felt like Quentin Tarantino would have looked at it and been like, I should have directed that scene. Because it's mm-hmm. like, they do like an intro to all of the key players of the Nazi killers, but they do it like they're introduced, like they're a part of a like movie in the 70s. And it's just, it's hilarious. Like, but there's also...
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Really intense Nazi scenes, like, because obviously you get flashbacks to actual, like, yeah, Nazi camps, and knowing Jordan Peele, ooh, I'm sure they're probably based on actual true accounts, so, yeah, mm-hmm. but yeah, that one's a good one, and I am excited, honestly, I'm just excited to find out when the Umbrella Academy is going to come back, because I need a happy, like, just something to look forward to in my life.
Yes, we need more Umbrella Academy in our life. I just never cared.
I don't need it even right now, but, like, please, Netflix, tell me when Umbrella Academy is coming out, because
I think it might be July-ish, but don't quote me on that. So.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I need it now. You know, I never liked that song, I Think We're Alone Now by Tiffany. I mean, I never hated it, but I didn't care. But after Umbrella Academy, I listen to it all the time and dance through my house, and it's fantastic, so.
Yeah, it's on my dance party mix, like, right now. Like, I listen to it today.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I tend to go for the lazy lesbian dance, but I'll also do the Luther. I try to do the Klaus, but no one can do the Klaus but Klaus, so.
No one can really do that one. I can kind of do the Diego, honestly.
Mm-hmm. The fishing one? Yeah, yes. I love that one.
So good.
So I am currently watching Handmaid's Tale. I didn't watch it when it first came out because of some triggering things, but I am at that point where I really want to watch it, and I think I can handle it, and I can. So, hard watch. It's not a fun watch, but it's fantastic. Yeah. I feel like it's an important watch. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just about female oppression or anything like that. I mean, that's what it is about, but the message can be applied to many, many other issues. So, oh, yeah. I highly recommend Handmaid's Tale. It's also just fantastic. It's got a lot of those lingering artistic shots. And I'm in the middle of season. Yeah, I'm in the middle of season two, and it's really good. Still reading Lovecraft, as always. Always will be. Currently reading New Mutants and Saga. Both fantastic comic books. The art in my New Mutants book, which I don't have the name of that in front of me, so I'll try to get that for everybody. But some of the art in a couple places, the artists change, and it's really sad, and I audibly gasped, and it was hard to get through. But I got through it, and the art's back to where I would expect it to be. So
yes.
And Saga, the art is always amazing, and the story's amazing, and everything about Saga is amazing.
I'm loving the Saga. Third book? Yeah, I'm on the third book. It's mm-hmm. so good. Oh, my God. I can't wait till this is over, or at least we can start doing exchanges in our mailboxes, and I'll give you one back, and then I can read the next one, and then I'll sanitize it.
Like, I never thought a weird goat man drawing, like, a drawing of a goat man as a comic book character would be hot to me, but it is.
It is. I can verify. 10 out of 10. Would recommend.
Yeah, totally. All right, well, I don't think I have anything else for our third attempt at this podcast.
Third attempt, but dude, Keith has helped so much. He gets a shout out in this. My husband, Keith, is amazing. And he made it so that this is like, I still have probably like 2 more minutes to talk. And this is all one recording.
Yay, we haven't had to stop. Woohoo! I figured there was probably a way, but I'm like an 80-year-old with technology. So
I know.
We're old and Keith is young. Keith, when he needs to get all the like technological knowledge written down before he turns 25, because Courtney and I said, when you turn 25, like you can't learn new technology anymore. But anyway, that ends our podcast, episode 3, technically episode 2 of The Rest is Confetti. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at confettipod, or send us an email, confettipod@gmail.com. If you are on iTunes, go ahead and give us a 5-star review if you would be so kind. You can also listen to us on Anchor and Spotify. Thanks, everybody. Bye.